Hello, welcome back. Glad you're still with us. It is module 5 of 6. We're studying Windows Store apps using HTML and JavaScript. And this is the refresh. So you've already learned how to do Windows Store apps with HTML and JavaScript. In fact, you learned it from Michael and I. Hopefully at least we contributed to your education. And now we're doing a refresh because Windows 8.1 is out and we're learning everything that's new about Windows 8.1. This module is going to be about packaging and deployment. Of course, there are some improvements in the way that things work, but naturally there's going to just be some differences because we're at a point now where there are Windows 8 apps and Windows 8.1 apps. And you're, as the developer, you're going to have to be concerned with juggling your Windows 8, your Windows 8 version, and your Windows 8.1 version, and how those appear for the user in the store. So we're going to talk about the packages, the differences between the physical package and the old ones, and then the deployment, how you balance the two different versions. So this is where we fit in here. This is actually module 5, packaging and deployment. And we're going to be looking at app packaging and then all of the improvements in the store to handle these new app packages. So, Michael, you want to tell us about these packages and how those are going to work?
Yeah. So, as you can see on the screen, the title says app resources, and then it says resource package. And then you see the .appx, and you might be thinking, oh, wait a minute, he made a mistake. You know?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it looks like an application package. But with 8.1, we are introduced to resource packages. And to provide you some steps or guidance as to what some of these things mean, let's start off right away and say what a resource package would contain. Let's start there. A resource package would contain things like strings or images. And if you're thinking, oh, that sounds like localization kind of stuff, you'd be right. It could be those kind of things. So that, for starters, that's what it is.
So in other words, all the Japanese words for the Japanese version of my app.
Sure. That's a great example.
Okay.
It's not limited to localization, mind you. There's also some, in fact, if you were to check resource at the MSDN samples or these sample projects that you can get, like we've been looking at. There's one called a gaming resource. If you were to search in there, that's what you would find. It's not JavaScript, though. That's the thing I didn't like about it, is it was entirely C++. However, what they're showcasing is that based on the target machine and the things that may or may not be used based on where it's going, it would actually have other resources that would have something to do for the target machine. So it doesn't have to be just about the localization. It can even be some DirectX type things or you know, other ways that they would manage some resources going.
Okay, so help me out here. I was still able to include all of my game resources and my other languages along with my application package before. Mm-hmm. So why would I need to put those into a separate package?
Excellent question. And the answer is, you don't have to. However, you'd probably want to, because think about it, the most important gain that you're going to have is the loss that you're going to have. And the loss that you're going to have is the loss of unnecessary resources going to a target machine if they're not required. In other words, the application file gets smaller. So that's a nice feature, right?
Gotcha.
We're expediting the deployment of this app. So if we can go back to that slide, I want to showcase that there's something else there. We were talking about how what it has, but also want to address what it never has. It never has code.
Ah.
Never any business logic whatsoever. And so the reason for that is because of the we already talked about reducing the size of the app, but that final line there, optional to app. Thus, the app is not dependent. So let's have a discussion about that. That kind of sounds strange, doesn't it? Optional to the application, it's optional. The app doesn't need to depend on it. So in order for that promise to be fulfilled, that the application truly would never have to use that resource file, then it truly means it would never have to be dependent on it.
Yeah, if it's not optional and I don't want to take a download hit, I don't want it to take too long to download, then how about no? We never download it.
Yeah. So if it's never downloaded, then that means one of the principles of the whole model here is that your application is autonomous. It is self-sufficient. It does not need that resource.
So that must mean that I've got to have at least one language in my app.
So if languages was the reason why you were doing the separation of the content, then absolutely you'd have to have a default at least. We assume English, but whatever your default language would be, that would have to be the default. And then here's the benefit of this. Because these additional resource packages can be created, that allows you to get that core application out there, and you can start to add things as you progress, which is really nice, but not impact everyone.
Ah.
Right? So the app updates are even different. You're not, just because you now support a different language doesn't mean you have to push that out to everybody, because it's not part of that core application package.
It's pretty slick.
I love it. So, if you're thinking about application resources, the very first thing that you would want to know is that they're there because they're external by choice, meaning external to that core app, but they provide the ability to add those extensions or the things that might be good for a particular audience, such as the localization with languages, or in the case of some of the intense graphical type games and so forth, you might target different machines with different types of resources based on what the platform is going to be. So that's the heads up for now. Now let's go ahead and move on to the next slide, and we're going to look at something called bundles. So an application bundle is a new term for us. I mean, we kind of had resources before, but they were never really sitting outside of that application project. Now we have this concept that they can sit outside. But when we say sit outside of what? So a bundle is actually something that manages the core app or apps and resources. So that's why here it says organizes packages of type application or resource. Now, if you're wondering right now, I'm going to have to do a lot of looking into it. And if you're in Visual Studio and you got 2013, and you're trying to right-click your solution or project, and you're like, how do I create one of these things? Well, you don't.
Let that land.
Yeah, how's that? So what I'd like to do, however, is I'd like to demonstrate for you how this magic occurs. So let's go over to my machine, and let's take a look at Visual Studio. Now, I'm going to set the scene here. I'm actually wanting to showcase a couple things here. First of all, I've got the new project dialog box open, and I had my I searched for Hilo over here, and I could see the Hilo JavaScript project.
First you chose samples on the left, online, right?
Yeah, when I went to online, I went to JavaScript, but of course now it says search results because I searched for Hilo, and that's why there's C++ things showing and all that stuff, because I did the search.
Gotcha.
But because it's here and I could see the JavaScript turn, I wanted to use this one because I happen to know, if you don't know this as the audience that's watching, the reason why this one came to my mind is it's touted as what? I don't know if you know, but what's the one thing that makes Hilo an attractive sample project? Do you have a clue why it might be exciting, Jeremy?
I'm completely clueless.
Let me tell you. It's because it's touted as a complete app experience. Like, it's the complete app demo, so to speak. It kind of does it all, or it's not just a demo. It's like an app. It's like here's how an app. It's kind of like a prototype. This is the way an app should be. So one of the things I remembered about it is it had localization in it. I thought, this will help me with my demo. And another thing it'll help me with my demo is this, because you're inevitably going to see this too. What if you have a Windows? If this is not targeting Windows 8.1, the Hilo app is for Windows 8. It's not for 8.1. So what am I going to do? Let's find out. So I'm going to accept it. I gave it the name Hilo App Demo. I'm going to say OK. It's going to load up and says, what?
That's important. Look at that.
This is important. So when you see this screen, it's saying retarget to Windows 8.1 recommended. So I am going to say OK. Now it recommends a backup. I know my backup is up at MSDN. So I will say OK. I'm going to go ahead and shut that down and shut this down. And right now it says it's targeting Windows 8. In fact, if I zoom in on that, you could see I target Windows 8. But I don't want that. I want it to target 8.1. So what would I need to do? Watch and observe. You right-click the project and say, retarget to Windows 8.1. It says, really? Yes. And would you like to open or save this file? How you can migrate over to this. I'll just say open so you can see what's inside. And says, here you go. And now I will close it. Great, you got to see that Word doc. So I will now build this entire solution. I have one success. Now you have to understand, I'm not even going to run this thing, because that's not what we're talking about. We're on app, packaging, and deployment. So I'm happy with my app right now, actually. So I'm going to go ahead and deploy it to the store right now. How would I do that? I've got this selected. I'd go to project, to store. I want to create an application package. I do that and it says, are you saying you want this to go to the store? Yes, that means I need to sign in. And using my palermo4@outlook.com and my password of, no, you're not going to hear it. I will go ahead and sign in. And it says, you have these two app names already up there. TouchDo and VipVids. And I'm intending this one to go to VipVids. So I will say OK. Now, of course, another thing you could do is you can go in there and you can create your own application thing. You know, that's something you do at the store portal. I'm just going to take this blank one here and say, yes, I will make VipVids what this is going to be and hit next. So this is where it gets exciting. Right here, generate that app bundle. So when you're thinking, where is it in Visual Studio? It's the wrong question. It's just, where is it? It's here. This is actually something that's happening. It dynamically goes through and identifies these resources for you. It can identify the things by nomenclature, because of course, when you're identifying certain things with localization, for example, you're going to be using the codes, you know, like the EN for English and the ES for Spanish and IT for Italian, you know, so on and so forth. So if you're using certain nomenclature with folder names and files, that's a big help. Plus whatever the documentation says for any respective kind of a resource file. But when I start to say I want to generate an app bundle, in this example, I'm going to say always.
What's the code for Klingon?
You know, actually, there is one, isn't there?
Is there one? It wouldn't surprise me.
There probably is one. Someone can tweet that out. That would be awesome. Or in the chat window.
Let us know in the chat
if
window.
If there's a two-character code for Klingon, I would guess KG.
And maybe. If there are multiple cultures within the Klingon language.
Yeah, exactly. You know, depending on which
or languages within the Klingon culture, I guess.
Yeah, maybe their date times are different or star dates or whatever. Okay, so another thing that you would want to know here is that you see that I have a neutral selected in the screen. You know, this neutral means that you know, target any CPU. But if I were to go specific there, this would actually impact my bundle, which is kind of interesting to know. It would impact my bundle. So because that would mean that there would be a different application targeting each one of those particular platform types or architecture types. So with that said, and I'm going to go ahead and take this link up here, Control-C, right? And say create, although I just realized that I think I get a link to it anyway in the next screen. So I have now created the app. And it's now saying, hey, whack it. launch that Windows application certificate. What version is that these days?
3.0,
he says. But I'm not going to do that because that's not the focus right now. What the focus is for me to go into here, which is this environment, and to let you know that there is a bundle AppX upload and also an AppX bundle manifest. Now, you might think, well, what's inside all these things and so forth, but I'm gonna clue you into something that's kind of cool. I'm gonna go over into Hilo, and you're gonna notice that there is a new folder that's been created called Bundle Artifacts. when I double click in here and read the text, it tells me, hey, here are all of the, in fact, I'll just zoom in on all of those right there. Could you guess, Mr. Jeremy, of those, if we were to, you know, number these, you know, this is one and that's two and so forth, you know, which one of these is the application package?
Oh, man, probably one.
Exactly. One would be the application package. All the rest of them are just resource packages based on what was inside of that project. So that means I didn't have to do the work. And as you notice, that application one says any CPU at the very end, yet I could have targeted specifics and received some different results. So you didn't have to do much work here. All you had to do was select that you wanted it to be bundled. And I'll go ahead and close here and say, I'll kind of wrap up this discussion. In fact, we can move off of my machine and go.
Now, I'm not sure about this, so don't quote me, but I think I remember hearing this at Build. I think that, you notice that two of your bundle artifacts were 140 and 180. Those were the scales, the images for
That's
140
correct.
And 180.
That's correct. Yeah.
Well, I think if you install this app and you're on a machine that is scaled to 100%, then it's not going to download either of
That's
those.
That's correct.
But then if you set your machine to a higher resolution, it will then go fetch that larger package because now it needs it.
So here's the thing that's interesting. The documentation that's out there right now and what's previewed says this is what you need to know and this is how things are going to get out there. The actual distribution of how that resource magic is going to happen is something that I can't yet test because I don't even have access to those areas. But we know there's going to be a way, and depending on the consent of the user and what they're going to allow for updates and so forth, if a machine does qualify for something, I believe what you're saying is probably true.
Yeah, pretty cool. That's neat. All right, does that conclude the packaging portion?
Yeah, so if I could just say in summary, it would be this, that you have application resources, you have application packages, packages that are resources, and then bundles that manage them all. Ultimately, when you're going up to the store, if you use bundles, you're going to be sending a bundle to the store.
Now, I didn't notice, does the bundle of this checkbox get checked automatically by default, or do I need to check that in order to send a bundle to the store?
It said...
Not that it'll definitely be the same in the final release of Visual Studio 2013, but...
I think what the default setting was is something like if needed. So I think it would do an interrogation.
Ah, I see.
I chose always because I'm like, I don't
You're
want
this
demo
to
fail.
Sure,
I want to
sure.
see it. You know, but it would do that examination, I think, by default.
I see. Okay, well, let's go ahead and look at my slides here. We're going to be looking, we looked at app packaging. We're going to look at the store improvements, and they are quite a few. Obviously, the store dashboard is going to have to be, and the whole logic behind accepting apps is going to have to be it's going to have to be upgraded in order to differentiate between these Windows 8 and these Windows 8.1 apps. We're going to look at that. We're also going to look at the new consumable in-app purchases. This is a big deal. There were a lot of game developers that were very much rueing the fact that in Windows 8 they weren't able to sell consumable in-app purchases, and their games really depended on it. So now they can do that, which is really great. You can also create really large in-app purchase catalogs. Whereas in Windows 8, you really have to micromanage which products are available for purchase. But in 8.1, you can have a limited set of products, and then each of those can have, your application can determine what kind of dynamically what the project is. So it allows for a pretty much limitless number of in-app purchases. We're also going to look at the concept of automatic app updates, which is new in 8.1. That's an exciting feature in my opinion. Proxy authentication for enterprise scenarios and some other random kind of a catch-all list of store improvements. So let's look at the app submission scenarios. These are a little lengthy, but they're important to consider, especially if you already have a Windows 8 app created, and especially if you have an 8 app submitted to the store. So you might be adding an app that's targeted for 8.1, and you already have published the same app that's targeted for Windows 8. So it's already in the store, just like Code Show is right now.
Right.
Code Show is in the store, and it's targeting Windows 8, right?
Okay.
I can't submit Code Show 8.1 yet. It's not open yet.
Right.
But this first scenario would certainly apply to me. I also might be adding an app that's targeting Windows 8 when I've already published the same app targeting 8.1. So after the Windows 8.1 store opens up and I can submit an app, I then might decide, you know what, I want to capture all the users that have not upgraded to 8.1 yet. And right. So I want to put the version 8 of my app in the store.
Makes sense.
I might have done them both at the same time, and now it's Friday, and it's time to submit both of these apps to the store.
Right.
So simultaneous submission.
Mm-hmm.
That's one scenario. I also might be submitting updates for Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 packages, either separately or simultaneously. So I need to land at those. Now,
right.
Once again, there's not too much that I can show you about this other than give you the security of knowing that all of these scenarios are handled. We don't have access to the store capable of receiving Windows 8.1 apps yet because it just hasn't been created.
And I was just going to comment that what I've discovered so far is that if you're wondering if the app bundle magic will be part of this process, absolutely.
There you go. Okay, so that's all I can really say about the scenarios, but let's move on and look at consumable in-app purchases. So consumables are interesting. You're purchasing a product, and you might purchase it again tomorrow. In other words, I'm purchasing 100 more gold coins in my game. And then I might spend those gold coins in the game, and so I need to purchase them again tomorrow. Well, in Windows 8, you had you had products that you would purchase, and then you had a receipt saying that you had purchased it already. And so you weren't able to purchase that again, but now you are. And so the workflow works like this. In your app, in your code, you do this call, request app purchase async, okay? And you purchase this consumable that you have set up in your store dashboard. You have defined that your app has this certain in-app purchase. So it might be a 100 gold coin pack, okay? That might be your purchase. So it returns to you the purchase results, and you get that the 100 gold coins were purchased, but the store is not going to assume that that transaction happened flawlessly and the user has already gotten the coins. Imagine the repercussions if there was an error anywhere in that process. You just paid good hard money for good fake money. And you got your 100 gold coins, supposedly, but the transaction didn't go through and you didn't get your 100 gold coins.
Unacceptable.
And the store thinks that you did.
Ugh.
It's not going to work. Yeah, it's bad. So what happens is you purchase those through that API, request app purchase async, and then you then have to tell the store, I did get these coins. You as the developer, you just added 100 coins to their pouch in the game. You know they're there. So now you tell the store, I'm going to report the consumable fulfillment. Okay? I'm going to report that these consumable products have been fulfilled. That means I added the gold coins to their purse in the store. All right? Now, it might be that you're doing that today, or it might be that you're going to do it another day, and you don't actually have to persist that handle so that you can get back and say this is the purchase that I'm concerned with. You can always go enumerate the unfulfilled consumables with this other API, get unfulfilled consumables, and of course these are all async functions. So you can ask the store, are there any outstanding products that I've purchased but I haven't reported that they've been fulfilled? So you do need to handle this as a developer. Make sure that you never cheat your user by taking his money and then not giving him whatever that consumable product is. Okay, we'll see a demo of this in just a second. Now, the other scenario is large in-app purchase catalogs. And you do this by requesting product purchase async. This is the same API, only you have the opportunity to tack on a little bit of extra information. Now, for the demo here, I'm going to take you to an MSDN demo. This would be kind of a lot for me to add to Code Show. I haven't had the time to do that right now. If you'd like to, more power
to you. Wouldn't
you
feel a little guilty charging people at Code Show anyway?
Oh, we wouldn't have to actually charge them. Because we do have a simulator center. And that's actually what the MSDN samples will use as the simulator.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I could just really rake in the money if
maybe, maybe.
Yeah, I'll have to think about that one. Okay, so I've downloaded the sample pack for Windows 8.1. This is available on dev.windows.com. All of those demos, let me get out of my slides here. All of those demos are available as one download, so it's super nice. Look at this, super nice to have all of those in one place.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
You've got it going.
Now, one of those is called Trial App and In-App Purchase Sample. I write those down on the slides because I can't remember those long titles. In there, I'll go dive into the JavaScript. Some of these samples are written in all three languages, but when you download the pack, you can specify, I'm only interested in the JavaScript. That's all you get. Save the hard drive. Okay, so I'm going to open the store.sln file. That's going to open a new instance of Visual Studio with this project loaded. You guys are all probably familiar with this process, but I won't make that assumption. So here we have one project, Store, and it's targeting Windows 8.1, as you can see, and I'm going to just go ahead and run that. At this point, we don't care as much about the code as seeing what the workflow is here and how this is going to work. So that's deploying. That means it's... Remember that when you run an app on Windows 8 in Visual Studio 2012 for Windows 8 or 2013 preview for Windows 8.1 preview, it's not just building your bits, it's actually deploying it on the machine. So it has to install that on the machine. So you'll see that it lands, well, it used to land on your start screen, but you'll notice it doesn't land on your start screen in Windows 8.1. It actually lands in, if you swipe up, you get to see all of your apps, and I love this. I didn't like the fact that every time I installed something, it added it to my start screen, even if I didn't want it there. There were so many things that I would have to go remove from my start screen. But if I go swipe down to all of these apps, then I'm going to be able to find the demo that I just installed. I believe that one is called SDK. It's not important. And I could pin that if I wanted to. By the way, you're probably all very curious about the headless chicken. If you are curious about the headless chicken, it means you didn't attend the gaming session yesterday. But I don't want to leave you out, so let's just go ahead and see what this is all about. I don't know that the Headless Chicken game needs any explanation. It's just totally awesome. I do need to make sure that I get these packets of blood before I run out. Okay, that's enough for that interlude. Back to the really exciting stuff. So we're talking now about in-app purchases, and here's the demo that MSDN gives us. And the first scenario is trial mode, okay? So this you've seen before, it really doesn't differ so much from Windows 8, so I don't need to show this to you, but I will actually click a couple of the buttons just so you can see that we're running in simulator mode. So if I enter trial mode, it says you're running a trial version of this. Now if I click on purchase, it still says you're using a trial version. Let's click, I thought this would all, oh, I have to buy the app. There we go. When I click on buy the app, it launches this dialog box that is not going to launch for your users. Your user will never see this dialog box. This is for you as the developer only. And this says, hey, you're using the simulator. It's like your user just purchased this app. What do you want to simulate happened? That everything went well or that there was a problem? Okay, so you get to test it. You get to simulate what exactly happened. You could say that there was an out-of-memory error when the user tried to purchase the app. In this case, we'll just say everything went great, they purchased it, no problem, continue, and now it says you've successfully upgraded your app to the fully licensed version. Because we're using the simulator, we get that experience. And then when we're ready to put our app in the store, all we have to do is a quick find and replace and rename simulator to the store without the simulator, and then the API is exactly the same. So it's really easy to test, and then it's really easy to publish. So that's what the way the simulator works. Let's look at in-app purchases. And you can see that these are just regular in-app purchases that we've always had. And I can buy these products, and it says that you own that one. And then I can buy the second product that I don't already own, and I can say that everything went well, and now I own product two. Okay, that's just the regular classic product purchasing. There are also products that expire. And so I can say that a user is going to purchase a product, but it only is good for the month. But now we have scenario four, consumable products. This is different. Now I'm going to buy product one. It's going to give me the interface, and it's going to say, we're buying product one currently. Everything went fine. You bought and fulfilled product one. So in this case, in the API, or in the code, it actually bought and fulfilled it in the same code and didn't even really show us the difference. But if you go to scenario five, the advanced consumable products, you get to see the steps broken out. So I can buy product one. Everything went fine. I now purchased product one, but it says you bought product one, and here's the transaction ID. Product one has been purchased one time and fulfilled zero times, okay? We have an unfulfilled purchase in the store.
Whoa.
And we can test for that. We can say get the unfulfilled consumables, and down here in the bottom it will say, here's the list of unfulfilled consumables. Product one has been purchased, but not fulfilled. In other words, the store is saying, you bought this and you didn't report to us that the user has successfully received it. So I can fulfill product one, and now when I get the unfulfilled, there are no consumable purchases awaiting fulfillment. So if I actually buy product one again, it all went well. And now let me buy product two, it all went well. Now, if I get unfulfilled consumables, check this out. I have product two as an unfulfilled consumable, and I still have product one because product one has been purchased twice and only fulfilled once. So in other words, they can continue buying gold coins, but they better get fulfilled as many times as they purchase.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you have an unfulfilled purchase, okay?
Yeah.
It's really important that you understand how all that works so that when it's time for you to implement it for your users, they're less confused than you are. That's important.
Good.
Okay, so now, large catalog product scenarios. This is for use in a limited few cases. I won't spend too terribly much time on it. Actually, if it's your case, though, it's extremely important to you. So I shouldn't say that. But this is a large catalog of products, whereas before it was difficult to maintain all those products. Now you can add offer IDs. And you as the developer in your app, you can dynamically choose what this offer ID is going to be. This might be a product ID or whatever.
Cool.
And display properties. So this is the widget in gold, size large, or something very specific, and you didn't want to set that up as a separate product. So there's your offer ID and your display properties name. I wonder if they're going to have spaces. I'm not sure. Buy it. Everything went okay. There we go. So I bought and fulfilled the widget in gold, size large, with an offer ID of 1234. It's been purchased. It's been fulfilled. And even though in my store dashboard that's only one product, product one, mm-hmm. I've actually purchased a 1234, a widget in gold with size large. Okay?
Right.
So now I can have a really large catalog of products, and I don't have to maintain all of that as the developer.
Sweet.
Good news. That's good news. Okay. That's all we're going to show on that. Let me jump back to my slides and see if that concludes. That does not conclude. Sorry, we have got plenty more. So this okay. One's quick. We've got this concept called automatic app purchases. I love it. I'm so thrilled about automatic app purchases. I feel like it was at least a part-time job for me to keep up with all of the tiles on my start page that had little numbers on them saying, you've got an update here, or the store icon, rather, that said you've got 7 updates.
Oh, right.
So I had
right.
to enter that and then select them all and update. And I really don't think I ever chose, you know what? I don't think I want the latest version right now.
Right.
I never chose that.
No.
So I would just rather it do that automatically for me every time.
Yeah, because every single time I see it, it's almost like a task. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, my.
Something to do.
And then what's even worse is if you have family members, and then I'm so fussy, I want them always clean, and I see like 13 on theirs. I'm like, what are you doing?
Me too. How can you live like that? That's like
exactly.
seeing the new mail icon
Come
and
on.
Not checking it. Okay, but you might not want this. You might not want for your apps to always be updated automatically. What if there's an app that all of a sudden started charging or all of a sudden started limiting its features based on the free version, and you want to keep version 2 because you still had access to everything. You don't want that app to update,
oh,
right?
Oh, you're saying don't update.
Don't update this app for me. In some cases. That's
an interesting scenario.
Interesting scenario. I'm kind of an advocate of the developer. I say, come on.
Get the latest.
Buy the latest version. Give him some love. He's a developer.
But there could be those who have that concern, like, I don't want to be forced to update anything.
That's right. So I'm going to show you how to find this setting on your computer. I'm telling you, you can just go to the store and then to settings and then to app updates. But, I was going to show you how you could search the settings on your computer until I remembered that this is in the settings in the store, so this won't work. But I'll show you anyway. If you want to search the settings on your computer, Windows W. Windows W will bring out the search bar, and if you type something like mouse, you're going to get all kinds of things that you can do for your mouse.
Windows W is an instant to your search?
It's absolutely. It's another kind of search.
To your settings?
It's not to your settings. It's to search your settings, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Windows, the things I learned. I'm so glad I attended this today. This is cool.
Windows I will take you to your settings, but Windows W will search your settings.
That's better.
And so, for instance, if you're... Before we start these presentations, Michael and I always go down to adjust your settings before giving a presentation.
Yeah.
I wouldn't remember where that is, but I can just search for it.
You just search for it.
That's exactly right. And it's all in there. And it's not just the name of the actual, like, applet or control panel applet that you need to launch. It's like the name of every task you might want to do.
Yeah.
So the other one I was thinking of was, what about, I want to turn on touch points so that whenever I touch my screen, I get a better touch point so people can see what's going on. So WinW, touch point, and I have the ability to change my touch input settings. There it is. And now I can go optimize my visual feedback for projection. Did you know about that setting? That one's great. That means that whenever I touch the screen, I want it to appear as a big black dot.
Exactly.
If I turn it off, it's more subtle.
It's subtle.
Subtle. We don't want subtle. We want bam, in your face. I just touched the screen. All right? Okay, so that was a sidetrack, but we're developers. We love sidetracks.
That's pretty cool.
Okay, but now I'm going to go to the store. And again, I'm too lazy to even take my hand off the keyboard and touch the store icon. I would rather type store. That's just me.
I do the same thing.
Okay. Okay, good. As long as we've got some camaraderie. Okay, so I'm going to open the store. And in the store settings, now remember that the applications that you run have their own version of settings. Okay, so you've got settings globally for the computer, and then you've also got your settings for each individual application. So here I'm running the store, and now if I hit WinI, I still do have my global settings at the bottom underneath this line. Let me see if this works. Underneath this line, these are the settings that apply to the entire computer. But above that line, let me get back there, above that line, those are the settings that apply just to this app. Okay. So now in here, I can go to Preferences, and I can choose that I want to... Did I go to the wrong place? Here, I'm guiding you, and I'm doing it wrong. I wrote it in the slides.
Was it right the app updates?
Store Settings App Updates.
You went to Preferences instead of App Updates, which I think is right below
it. Oh, there it is. App Updates.
It's right below there.
Thank you. That's why we do this in pairs. Yes, automatically update my apps. I have it checked. That means it's going to automatically update mine. That's the default setting. So you know as a developer that when you roll an update out, the majority of people are going to get that update.
Sweet.
That's really, really good for us as developers to know that the majority of people are going to get the updates that we push out there.
Nice.
Very, very good. Okay. Let's look at... Let's look at the right slide. That's what we should do.
Good idea.
So we're looking at, we've looked at the consumables, we've looked at the large purchases, all of the automatic updates of apps. And now the next thing we want to look at is proxy authentication. This is, again, just a mention. This is for enterprise customers for the most part, because a lot of enterprise customers using Windows 8 are sitting behind a proxy, but they want to be able to access the store. The store now supports WPAD and PAC, which are proxy authentication mechanisms that allow you to still use the store even when you're at work. Okay?
Okay.
That's that. That easy. Now, there are a few more store improvements. One of them is redeemable store credit. That means that for Michael's birthday, I can go purchase a piece of plastic, a card, that says you've got $25 worth of credit in the Windows Store. Wow. I can hand that to him in person, or I can do it online and send him an email that says redeem by using this code. So digitally or plastically.
Love it.
Is that a word? I don't think so, but digitally and plastically, I think that's what I'm gonna go with, okay? So this is really nice. I'm actually excited about this one because I'll be able to give the biggest geek present of all to my wife, Windows Store credit. You think she's gonna like that?
I do.
No. No. We also have a better search mechanism for searching the apps in the store. We had search before, but now it uses the Bing engine in order to search the app, so it's gonna be much better at finding your app. Even if the user enters some kind of strange search criteria or something, they're still going to be able to find your app. That's good for us.
Although, I would suggest here, for those that do submit their apps up into the store, this is such a good reason to just, why make it hard for Bing? Bing's great, but why make it hard? Make sure at the screen that prompts you for all the keywords in your descriptions, think about all those keywords if you want it to be discoverable.
And enter every single one. Mm-hmm. There's no reason not to enter every single one.
Even the competitive type words are good.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I'm taking you back to the store to show you the last point, which is the new improvements in the actual store interface. You can't miss them. If you open the store, you see a dramatically different user interface. Mm-hmm. This is meant to bring more apps to the screen, to the start screen at a time. It's meant to get people engaged, to make them feel like they're enjoying this shopping experience, and it's made to make them feel like they can really identify, analyze, and engage with your app when they get to your individual page. So let's go look at the app, the Code Show app, and it brings up, notice when I type in the search, this search control that I showed you about, I search for an app like Tile of Time, it says, hey, there's an app with that exact name. I'm going to give you that specific app in the
highly
search
results.
Highly
recommended, by the way.
This is a good app. Do you know who wrote this?
I do.
And?
And I would say that it doesn't matter who wrote it. It just matters how awesome it is.
Palermo 4 wrote this app. Yeah. Okay, but we're looking at Code Show right now, and you can see that on the front page, I can see all of the screenshots. They're small, but I can see them. I can vertically swipe and I can see all the different screens that have been uploaded for this. The screenshots, by the way, are important, important.
So you're scrolling down this time.
Yeah, up and down, up and down. And I've got a lot more information right on this page. I've got my reviews. Look, we've got some pretty good reviews for Code Show. This is good. Thank you guys for being part of the Code Show community. We've got related apps. That's brand new. There are apps that have something in common with Code Show based on the metrics. And then other apps, oh, this is embarrassing. Other apps by Code Foster.
Who knew?
It's going to show things like the sailing app, which is not an app I'm proud of. In fact, I should probably just take that out of the store.
Oh, wow.
Anyway. I did get a 5-star review, though.
I noticed.
By one person.
That's funny.
So that's it for the changes for the store, for packaging, for the store interface, the public store interface, for the dashboard for you as a developer when you're submitting your app. We kind of tried to tell you about all the different workflows. There's a lot of stuff that's new in 8.1. Anything else you feel like you want to add there?
It was a challenge, especially thinking about this. We're not talking about everything. We're just talking about what was different, what's changed. And in this area, there's a significant amount of changes. This is one where you would want to refresh, especially when the video or the recordings are available. You watch this again, you're going to say, okay, I want to make sure I understand all of this because this is significant. Application deployment, it's like I said in the previous module, you don't know this step very well. You didn't get anywhere. All the time and effort into development doesn't mean very much if you didn't get it into the store. And if you didn't get it into the store efficiently and effectively and with the best marketing bang, this is really important stuff. It's not the stuff you do all the time, but it's the stuff that you need to do.
Yep. So let's wrap this one up, and I hope you join us for the final module, Module 6, where we're going to be talking about tooling. Developers love tooling. Woo-hoo! I'm going to show you. I'm not going to spoil it. It's going to be good.
You got to watch and see.
I think it's going to be the biggest
problem. Don't miss it. Stay tuned.
See ya.